Good morning and welcome to Focus on Health, the weekly radio program where we talk about all the great things happening at Van Deest Medical Center. I'm your host, Lori Foster, and February is American Heart Month. Today we're going to be discussing heart health and the prevention of heart disease with family medicine physician Dr. Subhash Sahai. Before we do, I have just a couple of announcements to make. It turns out that tomorrow, February 8th, is a big day at Van Deest Medical Center. For one, we have a free education session that is taking place from 3 to 4 in the afternoon, and it is on heart function, EKG, and CPR. The team is going to be talking about why EKGs are performed and providing CPR instruction, hands only, for the layperson. There will be heart-healthy snacks provided along with educational packets, and this is going to be a great session. We do encourage registration. If you can give us a call, 515-832-7830, and let Audrey know if you're interested in attending. This is also going to be offered via Facebook Live. So if you cannot join us right at 3 o'clock, please know that it will be on our Facebook page anytime for you to view. Also, we've had a huge fundraiser going on. It started the 1st of February. It's our Sweetheart Box fundraiser, and it is being presented by our hospital auxiliary. We have 33 themed baskets, and I can't even begin to name them all, but fantastic baskets. And we have a silent auction going on that ends tomorrow at 1 o'clock. So I encourage you to go to our website, vandeestmc.org, and right on the homepage is a link, and you can check out those baskets. You can get a bidder number if you haven't done so already, and you can start bidding on those baskets. Again, the bidding will end at 1 o'clock tomorrow. We will contact the winners to pick up their baskets. And what's really awesome is 100% of the proceeds from this fundraiser go back to the auxiliary, and in turn, the auxiliary supports patient care needs here at our hospital. And then lastly, I do want to give another reminder that the Webster City Community Blood Drive is going on tomorrow as well. It will be 12:30 to 5:30 at St. Thomas Aquinas Church. Appointments are encouraged. You can go to lifeservebloodcenter.org to schedule an appointment. And with that, I wanted to save plenty of time for our topic today. As I mentioned, it is American Heart Month, and what a great time to be talking about heart health. Globally, heart disease and stroke are the leading cause of death, killing an estimated 2,300 people every day in the United States, according to the CDC. So it is really important to be talking about this, and heart disease more so than any other cause, including cancer. And it's not just men who are at risk. American women are up to 10 times more likely to die from heart disease than from breast cancer. And so I have invited Dr. Subhash Sahai to join me on the program to talk about heart health and how we can potentially prevent heart disease. Good morning, Dr. Subhash.
Well, good morning. You know, yesterday when you talked to me about this program, and I started reminiscing about that when I started my practice 46 years ago, and there wasn't really that much to offer for patients who had a heart attack or stroke. And it is just amazing how this whole process has, I wouldn't even say evolved, but been revolutionized with the new medication, the new technology. That is amazing. It is just amazing to me to see that and know that. And I've lived through that stage, I think. I'm lucky to live through a stage where the changes have taken place so fast. And I speak that from my personal experience, like family, the family history of heart disease in my family, and diabetes, et cetera, et cetera. But that's beside the point. But I've seen the people, the population. We used to have patients with heart attack lay in bed for 6 weeks mm-hmm. and not do much. people with heart failure, we didn't have much to offer other than the water pills or diuretics, as they used to call them. We call them now. The people call them water pills. We used to give digoxin, which is almost a useless medication. It's used in very few cases, and there are very specific circumstances it's used in. But so it is just mind-boggling. And when I think about the incidence of stroke in the United States had dropped by 40% in the last three decades, just believe or not, and the survivability has improved because the new medication that we have available to us, the new technology that we have available to us, from thrombolytic agents that break down the clots to the point of the clot extractions that can be done in a major blood vessel. People who can get the stenting done for heart attacks, you know, it is, we're supposed to have our patients from here to the cath lab in Fort Dodge within 60 minutes. But our time span is no more than 30 minutes. It's amazing. The patients come, they get their EKG done, they get the blood test done, and they're in the cath lab.
And they're out the door, you're
right. If that's what
they
need, they're there. And so the prognosis is very, very good. After all, like they say, the muscle is the time. You know, the less the time you waste, more the muscle you save. That is true for the heart. Similarly, less the time you waste, more the brain you save in case of stroke. And it is just amazing. Patients with major strokes, sometimes they'll come in and they can't talk, they can use their arm, and within 3-4 days, they're walking and doing everything. That wasn't possible a number of years ago because we didn't have immediate CAT scans available. We didn't have the MRIs available. We didn't have CT angiograms and the diagnostic skill that we needed. And not only that, once you make the diagnosis, if you don't have therapy for it, what good is it? So that's the reason I think so many changes have taken place. But more importantly, we're also using what we call evidence-based studies, evidence-based treatments. In other words, there are studies that show that this is going to be helpful or this is not going to be helpful. Take an example of aspirin. You know, we're giving aspirin to anybody and everybody and now saying, no, wait a minute. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a place for aspirin. There is not a place for aspirin because we give aspirin to the patient and all of a sudden we increase the risk of their bleeding from the gut or otherwise, and it may not be helpful. But there are other medications we give to protect the patient from heart disease. So things have changed, there's no question. Control of blood pressure is the other thing that comes to my mind. When I first started my practice, I think we had 5 medicines for blood pressure control. And I bet you we have 150 now. And the new ones coming on the horizon every day. And I'm not just talking about one class of drugs, I'm talking about different classes of drugs. The newest kid on the block is the SGLT2 inhibitors. When the ACE inhibitors came out first, we were so happy about them. You know, my God, what a drug. How it's going to work, how it's going to change the whole spectrum of control of blood pressure. Then came the medications that were blocking the angiotensin converting enzyme, which has to do with the blood pressure. And now the other treatments that are on the horizon right now, the diuretics, the water pills, et cetera, et cetera. So things have changed. And that has improved not only the incidence of this disease, but also the quality of life for people. There's no sense in saying that we save this patient's stroke if they do not have the functioning mind or brain or whatever.
Right.
So we want to make sure the quality of life is there also. Let's talk about lipids for a second. The first statin that came about was, I think, in 1984, 87, something like that, if I remember correctly. And that was just finding by coincidence. Somebody was looking for antibiotics in Japan, and they came up with statins. And from the red yeast rice, you know, that everybody talks about. Oh, by the way, red yeast rice is not that effective, so don't waste your money and time in it, unless you want to do it for any other reason. But anyway, the statin, the first one came out was simvastatin, or Zocor, as it's known. And now we have so many other drugs, which are much more effective in bringing your cholesterol down from let's say there's a drop of cholesterol, but 50 to 60% by using the drug or combination of drugs, okay? So we can do a very, very good job. We didn't have that kind of opportunity available to us for our patients, and you as a physician too. Mm-hmm. We couldn't do anything about that. And statins have been godsend when it comes down to the atherosclerotic cardiovascular disease. That means the person who has heart disease, person who had stroke, person who has aneurysms, person who has ischemia to the limbs, lower limbs, etc., etc. Person comes with diabetes to us. In addition to controlling the blood sugar, what's the next thing we do? You put them on a statin. Say, doctor, I don't have high cholesterol. I said, I don't care. Whatever cholesterol you have is too high for you. Mm-hmm. So take the medication and you'll be amazed how it helps you in the long run. I mean, that's what we're looking for, right? That's not to say we don't do some other things along with that, but we need, so it's a constellation of things we do, right? The type of lipids we treat, cholesterol is not the only thing. Then you want to find out what kind of cholesterol it is. It's not the new kid on the block, lipoprotein A, most physicians don't even know about that, is what we call the horrible cholesterol. Because lipoprotein is just a protein that binds the cholesterol. So lipoprotein A is that type of protein that binds this cholesterol, and therefore it's much, much more what we call atherogenic or causes more hardening of the arteries than any other type of cholesterol. And the physiology behind that's altogether different. We all make clots all day long, right? And we all break clots all day long. But if some reason we make a clot and we cannot break it, guess what? That clot becomes part of you and therefore leads to the hardening of the arteries or atherosclerosis. And that's what lipoprotein A does. It blocks that enzyme. So you can't break the clots.
So this is the one we need to be worried about.
That's correct. Now, so anymore, if I do a lipid panel anybody for the very first time, I would always do lipoprotein A. If I get them from somebody else and I see the lipids been done, they haven't had lipoprotein A done, I will do that anyway. It's a once-in-lifetime test. It doesn't have to be repeated again and again. Such a cheap test. Cholesterol, I would check every 3-4 months or whatever it is, depending on the patient. But lipoprotein A, I will never check again. Because we only have one medicine available for that, and that's not easily available to us. Okay. Now I say, okay, so what are you going to do about it? Now you got high lipoprotein A. If I can't do anything, what good is it? Mm-hmm. So true. But at least you know that your risk factors are pretty high, and therefore you should be paying more attention to your lifestyle.
And taking extra steps.
Extra steps, correct. Yes. You can still lower the total cholesterol, that would be beneficial. You can still lower the triglycerides. There's another protein called ApoB. You can lower that, and that's extremely helpful. So you can do those type of things, right? So, but not only that, because it's what we call autosomal dominant inheritance. That means the parents pass it on to majority of the times. It's not wild, it's inherited. It's important, if you're a mother or a father, that your kids have it done too. If you find out your brothers, sisters haven't had it done, have them do it too. And you'd be amazed how many times this gets picked up, and it's so helpful for the patients. You know, we hear all the time the people are good athletes, etc., etc., they die suddenly. And the studies retrospectively show that they might have some other type of abnormality, including lipoprotein A. That's one of the abnormalities also. And lipoprotein A just doesn't cause the hardening of the arteries. It can, because of peripheral vascular disease in the lower limbs, it can lead to amputation of the limbs. It also causes blood clots in the legs. The people who, you know, just get the blood clots in the legs, and therefore they can pulmonary embolism. So it has many other issues associated with it. So it's a very, very important test. I push for it. I have pushed for that in my office all the time to everybody, and I do it, and I do it religiously, I believe in it totally. I think it's the test that's available to us. It's a cheap test. It doesn't call for much. It's just one-time test in your lifetime. It's not something that I'm going to do every time, right? So, and it gives you different levels too, you know, what your lipoprotein A is, because it is a slope that it gives you. Higher the lipoprotein A, higher the risk factors. You know, so there's no safe lipoprotein A. But if you have 4 or 5, then it's perfectly safe. But if you have 200, well, you know where you stand. And then you need to take more precautions and be more aggressive. Don't smoke, please. You know, go ahead and exercise. At least a trip, give 150 minutes of exercise to yourself every day. And part of that exercise should be the resistance type of exercise, right? So those are the type of things that you do to improve on your cholesterol, etc. Don't drink too much, right? Don't eat the type of foods that can contribute to... So those are the things that we... You know, they're anymore, they're easily available on the computer, but if you don't make use of it, it's just like buying a treadmill and using it as a hanger.
Right.
Right?
Which many people do, we know.
Well, we all do. So, I mean, you know, that's just the way life is. So those are some of the things I do. Then, depending on the family history, the next step I take is do a calcium scoring on the people. Calcium scoring basically tells me if there's a calcium deposit in the blood vessels of the heart. The calcium deposit only happens in the blood vessels of the heart if you have hardening of the arteries. Otherwise, it doesn't happen. It'd be just like rusty pipes, right? So, okay, if you have a calcium deposit, that means that you have already some hardening of the arteries or atherosclerosis developing, and therefore you should be paying attention to it. And I can show them on the picture, and I can impress on them much more than just saying that, you know, you have a high risk, right? If I take the calcium scoring on a patient, I say, you know, this is what you've got. I can see the calcium deposit in the blood vessels, and these are the blood vessels that supply this part of the heart, and therefore, you know, how it can impact your quality of life. Then they listen, and sometimes they will take the medications, or quite often they would become, they would understand and they'll take the medication. Sometimes they won't, then, you know, it's their choice, of course. So, I when my kids turned 40, I told them all, I said, I want your calcium score done, and I want it on my desk within 1 week. I didn't give them a choice. I said, that's the way it's going to be. I want it on my desk. And by God, I had them all within 5 days. It didn't cost much. It's one, you know, $100, $90, that's all the test cost. And there's no pain involved. You lay on the table for 5 minutes, you pay cash money, and you're done. Period. And it tells you early on that if you have a calcium deposit, that puts you at a high risk of having heart disease. If your cholesterol is 200 and you have calcium deposit, that is worse than having cholesterol of 250 and no calcium deposit, or 300 and no calcium deposit. I may be willing to say that, fine, if you don't want to take the medicine, don't do it, but please follow the diet. Okay. But you have a cholesterol of 200 and you have a calcium deposit, I'm going to ask you to take the medication. I'm going to encourage you to take the medication, okay, to get your cholesterol down to the normal or the LDL or the low-density lipoprotein to maybe 50 or 70 or 40, depending on what the level is, what their age group is too. So there's certain risk factors we can't change. We cannot change the family history. We cannot change the sex. And we cannot do anything about the age. Those are the three major risk factors, okay? But there are things like high blood pressure, diabetes, high cholesterol, smoking that we can address. The way you live, how much exercise you do, all that makes a big difference, right? So we can ask the patients to make those kind of changes. And some of those things can be done through your diet, and some of them do require medication. If the patient comes to me, say they have a cholesterol of 300, oh, doctor, I think I'm going to get it down by next 6 months by eating this, 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 won't happen. Most of your cholesterol is controlled by your liver and by your genetics. It is not from the diet. Diet only controls about 20% of your total cholesterol. Even if you ate the best kind of diet, your cholesterol from 300 to 240 will not drop, I can assure you, unless you go fast yourself, you know, and do nothing else. But it just won't happen. Not only that, if it does happen, maybe first time, just it'll be up the next 3 months for sure. And the other thing people always question me, but you see, the tissues need the cholesterol. Yes, you're right, they need the cholesterol. But remember this, the brain has the ability to make its own cholesterol. It doesn't always depend on the liver. Newborn baby's cholesterol is no more than 60 or 70. So they still have the developing brain. Their brain goes pretty fast.
And they're making their developing own, right, even faster.
Faster, much faster, right? So they make their own cholesterol in the brain. They don't have to depend on the cholesterol that comes to them from the bloodstream. At least we don't have any evidence of that, but we do know the neurons have the ability, not the neurons, but the other cells in the brain have the ability to produce their own cholesterol. So those are the kind of things I think people need to understand. Now, having said all this, I know things change, the studies change, the research changes. I'm not going to say that I'll eat my words 10 years from now if I'm still practicing, which I don't think I will be. But still, you know, things change and we all should change. I mean, that's the whole purpose of science and that's the whole purpose of evidence-based treatment. If the evidence does not show it, then don't do something like that. Do something that is going to be helpful and beneficial for you. I would also put a plug in for taking care of your teeth. Because the gum disease is bad for your heart because it causes inflammation in the bloodstream. Your C-reactive protein, which is a marker that goes up, and therefore you have a high risk of having heart disease. That's why people who have rheumatic diseases like rheumatoid arthritis, psoriasis, gout, etc., they have a higher risk of having heart disease because inflammatory markers. That's one of the tests we do, by the way, too, for the patients, where I can't find any other risk factor and they have some hardening of the arteries, the next thing I have available to me is to do the high sensitivity C-reactive protein, which is a simple blood test. And it tells me if there's something going on, and sometimes that can be an inherited issue or sometimes can be other issues like the teeth. So I'll put a plug in for the dentist. But the dentists alone are not going to be able to do it unless you don't brush your teeth and take care of your teeth like you should. So it's a multifactorial issue. It's not just one or two factors that you can change and you can expect to make a difference. But having said that, number of people, there are people who do all those things and yet would be having problems with heart disease or stroke, and sometimes you can't do anything about it. That's just the way life is. Sometimes the patients come in and you examine them, you don't find a risk factor, they had a stroke. Well, my God, there should be a reason for that. Do they have atrial fibrillation? Do they have a hole in the heart? So the blood clot could travel from right to the left and therefore go to the brain. And you find those things and then you treat them appropriately. But you don't find them initially. It's all retrospective. Until about 20 years ago, when patient had a stroke and we couldn't find any blockage in the blood vessels, we called them cryptogenic strokes, that means hidden stroke. We don't know what caused it. Cryptogenic stroke was a word used quite often. But now we know that majority of those strokes are caused by atrial fibrillation. You could just have irregular heartbeat for a short period of time, and that would make clots in your body, and they could travel to the brain, they could travel to the extremities, etc., etc., and they could cause those issues. So we live and learn, and as long as we learn and we learn and put it to practice, then I think we do very good. Right. And that's the most important part.
And we need to apply those prevention guidelines. You know, talking heart disease, a lot of people think of heart disease as an older person's disease, but we really need to be, as a society, looking at heart disease in our younger years, in the 20s and 30s. And like you say, a lot of it is predetermined by genetics, but there are some simple diagnostic blood tests and interventions that we can do to really set people up so that not just for the next 5-10 years, but for a lifetime, they can work to prevent heart disease.
Yeah, we just had to convince the person that, look, you have children, you have grandchildren, you want to live to see them grow and succeed in life, then you better take care of yourself too. Because that is what makes the society interdependence. It's so important that we do that. And I feel very strongly that we should take advantage of the studies, advantage of the research that we have. And if things change, they change. Then we change with them. I'm not saying you jump right away and change, but at least look into it and then change.
Explore that. And you did a nice job even at the start of the program in talking about what you've seen over your career and even the medications we've seen, the statins. Now there's a family of statins. And so some of them can have some side effects with them, but there's not just one. There are so many more to choose from that maybe if one doesn't work for a patient, another one will.
And we can go beyond statins too now. We don't have to depend on statins. There are other medications by mouth we can give which are not statins. Okay, they're more expensive, yes they are, but if we justify to your insurance company, etc., we can get those for you. There are some injectables you can take every 2 weeks or once a month, and they'll bring your cholesterol down to much better level than even statins. Okay. Similarly, there are other drugs that are becoming available that you take once every 6 months now. They're going to be approved pretty soon here. They'll bring your cholesterol down for 6 months. But having said that, they won't be cheap, I can assure you of that. Mm-hmm. Right? But they'll be available to us down the road. So things we'll be able to do. And when you think about that, majority of our diseases are caused by the blood vessel diseases. Stroke to aneurysm to heart failure to heart attacks, all those things are caused by the blood vessel diseases. Amputation, lower extremities, or other organs of the body, and sometimes inflammatory markers that are present in the blood, etc. So if we keep those conduits open, if we keep those channels open, I think we're doing a good job in preserving our organs because they depend on the blood supply and their vitality depends on these this blood supply.
You're right. And we do have to take care of our blood vessels and utilize all the tools in our toolbox.
That's right. And then that's what we try to do. We try to push it. I always state that, look, I'm not 100% either. There are things that, you know, I'm not saying that you don't live your life, but at the same time, too much of anything is bad. That's all there is to it. Moderation is a good way to go.
And I agree. I believe everything in moderation. Yeah. I am with you.
Yeah. But there are certain things there's no moderation in, like smoking, illegal drugs, right, promiscuity, not wearing a seatbelt. I mean, there's no moderation in some of these things.
Right.
Right. So those are the type of things that you have to pay attention to and be 100% in those.
Very good. Dr. Subhash, thank you again. A wealth of information. Dr. Subhash is available. He sees patients at Vandy's Family Health Clinic here in Webster City. If you have questions about your heart health or interested in scheduling an appointment, you can call the clinic at 515-832-7800. Once again, thank you so much, Dr. Subhash.
My pleasure.
And that will do it for today's edition of Focus on Health, brought to you by Van Deest Medical Center, where our focus is you.